Big thanks to HelloFresh.com for supporting us this week on Current Geek. Receive $40 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CURRENTGEEK. It's all one word. That's Current Geek when you subscribe at HelloFresh.com.
Good plan.
I have it.
Current Geek! Current Geek! Aha.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world and you, to bring you all the news and things that are current and matter most. My name is Scott Johnson, and that is Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
It sure is. That right there is Tom Merritt, and I'm excited to be on Current Geek now more than ever, Scott Johnson.
Why? Why now? Why more than ever? Why?
Because we live in a world of wonder and science and romance and... Also, because Molly Wood's here today.
No way. What? Somehow the podcast royalty all in the same room. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. PRI's own, Marketplace's own, Molly Wood, everyone. Molly Wood, welcome to the show.
Hello, world. I am also delighted to be here.
It's so nice to have you here.
I am delighted. I can't believe it's taken this long. This is so exciting.
It has, and I have to say an embarrassing thing. You are the impetus for us finally getting off our butts and telling you should come on. Because you had said, hey, I should come on there. And I said, yeah.
Because I was like, can I be on your show?
Well, you know.
Like a big dork.
We have...
You guys, would it be cool if one time, just like one time, maybe like for a show you know no one's going to, like a holiday.
Yeah.
No one's going to listen. Yeah. Would it be okay if I came on?
Would that be okay? Sure. Anyway, it's great to have you. And great work over there at Marketplace, by the way. I love it. It's awesome.
Hey, thanks, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
I hope to continue to hear you when... Who is it? Guy Rizdahl is out of town, or
yeah, you know that dude.
Yeah, that guy. And then you just get on, and then we're all like, "Whoa, Molly, remember her? She was that person I listened to in 2005. Used to talk to Tom in my car while I was driving to work. Boy, those are the good old days."
And they're like, "She doesn't sound quite right. That's not right."
Well, I'm glad you're here. We're gonna do some headlines. Tom, y'all set? Let's do this.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering. As do many others in high public office.
What do we have on today's docket?
We have some military news for you, Scott. The U.S. Army has issued a response to theories developed on Reddit and elsewhere that Captain Steve Rogers is owed up to $3 million in back pay. Now, you may know Captain Rogers. He was commissioned as an 03 Army captain from 1945 through 2011. Army spokesman Wayne Hall told Business Insider that if, in fact, Captain Rogers were not fictional, he might actually be owed even more than $3 million because they didn't factor in things like potential promotions that are bestowed while someone is on missing status. He also said they miscalculated the regular cost of living increases. They should have happened more frequently. So it turns out Captain Rogers would be owed about $4 million northwards.
Wow. This reminds me of that thing that was all the rage a while back about how much the Death Star would cost if you built it in today's dollars.
You're right.
Seems like $3-4 million is pretty good for a guy of his stature.
I love the fact that the Army was like willing to play, except that being the Army, they had to stipulate, were he not fictional?
Like dot in the I's, cross the T's.
We know, but that, you know, exactly. They're just so like, ha ha ha.
Do you think though at one point, Molly, like somebody actually said in a meeting or whatever, we have to put language in there that distances ourselves from the fantasy of the character? Like, do you think
not fictional?
I don't know that
put that language in there.
Yeah.
We've set it up the chain and we've reviewed it, and I don't think it's clear that Captain Rogers is fictional and that we don't actually owe this money. Let's just put in some language that stipulates that right up off the top, if you would, Wayne.
I want
actually Business Insider or the Nerdist or maybe me. Like, I want to go find the actual person who got this assignment.
Yeah,
because he really specified the pay scale. Like, they went, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
Also, people can get promotions when they're missing.
Yeah, apparently I did not realize that either. Like, that makes sense. Is that if you're missing you're then recovered?
That does not make sense.
Well,
no,
like
if you're
a posthumous,
if you're recovered from being missing in action,
yeah,
and you've been gone for like 10 years, like, yeah, Yeah, give that person a promotion, I think. No?
If I disappear from my job for 10 years, I'm not going to get promoted in my absence.
But I mean, I'm assuming CBS News is, CBS Radio isn't going to come in and capture you and keep you high, like in a prison.
Just being recovered from captivity does not mean you're good at your job. Yeah. I'm just saying. It means the people who recovered you from captivity are good at their job.
I just think you put up with a lot in line of duty.
He was frozen. What does he know?
All right. Okay. Actually, Molly has a pretty good point.
Else, it's an OSHA violation. Yeah. Right?
Or somewhere in the multiverse, there needs to be a spinoff in which he gets pissed and comes in and asks for back pay.
Yeah.
I mean, he's clearly pissed already. Like, yeah, clearly.
Was there even a joke in two or something? Something's ringing a bell here that he may have brought it up or something, or someone else did.
Right.
Kind of back him. Pay
yeah.
kind of thing.
That's pretty awesome, though.
I think it might have been an episode of JAG.
Oh, no? NCIS. Come on. Get it straight.
Way to play along, Army, in the most Army way possible.
If he were, in fact, not fictional, so we're all clear, he's fictional, right?
Just so we're all clear, there is no one like this who is currently owed $4.7 million, and we would prefer if you would not, in fact, show up at the Pentagon asking for that back pay in your Captain America costume.
Yeah. Do you think this cost anybody any money? Like, this didn't cost taxpayers money to find out how much we owed him, right?
Sure.
It totally did. I bet we could calculate how much we are owed.
Oh, Lord. I don't like thinking about that.
As a taxpayer, I am willing to pay it.
All right. This is one you'll let go. Those plungers that are $480, forget it. This, I'm cool with.
Compared to many, many other things I'd rather not pay for, yes, I'm willing to pay for that dude's time, that private who had to go run this down.
I was going to say, so it wasn't the Army spokesman, Wayne Hall, who did all of this.
Of course not.
Yeah.
No.
It was Private Dithers.
It was Private Dithers or whatever. Who was like, really? This is what I signed up for?
I love it.
Sweet.
Yeah. It was either that. You're absolutely right. It was either like, really? This or it was I've already calculated this at home. I'll just bring it in. It's great. I was on the Reddit thread.
It's in my car. Brilliant. Well, there you go.
All right. Kevin Smith says he is working on an Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai TV show. Before you get too excited, Smith says a deal was struck, and in the next month he'll take it out and try to find a home for it, which really means there's a development deal and he's attached. Nobody's actually greenlit it yet. No scripts have been written or anything like that. But hey, Kevin Smith's excited about it, so maybe it'll happen.
So I don't want to sully my nerd card, but I've seen I've seen Buckaroo Banzai maybe twice, and I don't remember a thing about it. Like nothing. There was a guy. He was kind of a swashbuckling pirate man in space or something, and everybody was skating, or maybe that's ice pirates. I may have conflated the two. Like, I don't know, man. Molly, you have any recollection of why we should want a reboot of Buckaroo Banzai?
This is that crazy. Are there like, there's like little people.
I think that.
Like, I can only get in trouble here, but mentally I am imagining tripping balls and space.
you might be thinking of, you might be mixing it with Time Bandits. Remember Time Bandits? That's about the same time.
I totally am.
Same era.
Yes.
Yeah, same era, bunch of little people in it. Amazing movie, by the way. Time Bandits, I remember well.
That's what I'm thinking of. So I don't even know what it's really funny because I looked at this lineup and I was like, crap, I'm not qualified to be on the show at all because Kevin Smith is clearly super stoked about this. And I'm like,
Tom,
Buckaroo Banzai is one of my favorite movies of
Buckaroo
all time.
Banzai,
I heart that Buckaroo Banzai. The good news is it doesn't sound like this is even remotely likely to actually happen. So I don't think I have to worry about like getting my t-shirt.
Yeah.
No, man. Brian Brushwood was so excited about the prospect of this that he was like, oh my gosh, did you put the Buckaroo Banzai thing in the lineup for Cord Killers? And I hadn't, even though I'd seen it. And I was like, oh no, but sure, let's talk about it. So, I mean, he is not alone. There are people who are slobbering at the mouth because wherever you go, there you are. Ha ha ha, Buckaroo Banzai. Yeah. And so I hope it does get made.
Yeah, why not?
Adventure surgeon, rock musician, Buckaroo Banzai and his band of men, the Hong Kong Cavaliers, take on evil alien invaders from the eighth dimension.
Oh, I was hoping it was alien invaders.
I'm excited. Alien invaders is so natural that I don't know why I don't always say that.
Well,
I'm excited to jump right on this bandwagon if and when it ever gets made.
Okay.
Buckaroo Banzai, in my opinion, is what George Lucas always said he wanted Star Wars to be. Yes. Which is like a send-up modern take of 50 serial.
Yeah.
Films.
Yeah. There's definitely some Flash Gordon in the DNA of this thing for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
And also, Smith hasn't done anything on TV in a long time, so I'm all about that. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes. I mean, other than comic book men.
Well, I forgot about that. But I mean, like, you know, a creative endeavor like.
But a scripted drama.
Sure. Or when he directed that, that what was the show where the devil made a deal with the fat guy and they did some stuff? Gosh dang it. It was some WB thing.
The Apprentice?
It was pretty good. No.
I was just racking my brain like, how could I make
what
this
was
work?
That called? It was anyway, it was really good. And he directed the pilot and it was fantastic. And then the show kind of got dumb after that when he quit working on it. So I'd love to have his, you know, let's get his hand in a cookie jar. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Just a can in a cookie jar.
Sure.
I'm just going to leave that one right there.
All right.
Hey, ABC announced that Agent Carter would not be brought back for a third season, and people got really upset. Fans have taken to change.org. I know. And around 100,000 have signed a petition asking Netflix to pick up the show.
Doesn't seem like enough.
Isn't that crazy, though, that the modern is not like, send peanuts to get Jericho renewed. It's
dude,
get
I
Netflix
can't believe you
to
totally stole my Jericho thunder. Like, that's exactly, I was like, you know what? If truckloads, tons of peanuts could show up at CBS headquarters and it did not, I personally, in a meeting when they bought us, remember, was like, Mr. Moonves, Mr. Quincy
Very important
Smith,
question,
I was like,
Mr.
can
Moonves?
You bring back Jericho? And they were like, you should watch this horror miniseries that we're doing. And I was like, I hate you people. Like, Agent Carter is never coming back.
Yeah.
Not on ABC.
Well, okay, but hold on, like, though. Hold on. So here, we talked about it, I think, briefly on some other show. I don't remember why or what the deal was, but bringing it to Netflix doesn't seem that crazy. They're riding high with the, you know, Daredevil business, and they got a new Punisher series coming, and Jessica Jones for a second season, and like all this stuff. Why not?
Yeah, Gilmore Girls and Arrested Development. Yeah, I mean, it would be in that tradition.
Yeah, but specifically, it's Marvel stuff. You know, like they've got a deal already. Now, while that Marvel stuff is kind of dark and gritty compared to this, Peggy Carter is not quite. In that vein, but still, it seems like there's a home for it. So I actually think the idea of bringing it to Netflix is a great idea, but I think 100,000 signatures is nothing, not enough, I guess is what I'm saying. There needs to be more than that.
They need more. Come on, you guys. Come on. Peggy deserves better.
Yeah.
I love Peggy Carter. I love the Agent Carter series. I think the dirty secret is the reason it didn't get renewed is not enough people watched it.
Yeah. But yeah.
And I'm looking at this change.org petition, and honestly, I feel like it should be bigger. Mm.
I mean, the fact that it's not tells you a lot of what you need to know, which is it doesn't mean that it wasn't a good show. Mm-hmm. It just means it had apparently a somewhat limited audience.
Yeah. So.
That takes us back to Scott's point, which is that's what Netflix does is say, we don't really care if it's popular. We care if it has a niche audience that really cares about it.
And stays so then subscribed. It would matter,
can they get Haley Atwell? Would sure. be the big
and she's busy. Thing. She's got other stuff going on. So I doubt it as well. So I don't think this is going to happen.
And
I
feel like even Netflix, like there's only so much that you can say, I don't care about traffic. Even Netflix would say, we're going to need a couple more than 98,000 signatures.
Yeah.
They did Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon sequel movie.
They did. They did. It's the direct-to-DVD market that we don't mind. It's the one we don't think of it as cheap. We go, oh, it's coming to Netflix. That's awesome. But it's really just direct-to-DVD. Awesome. Yeah. Here's the other one.
But is that
thing.
What Netflix wants to become, too, is sort of the dumping ground for shows that nobody would watch on the real TV?
Well,
they gave Adam Sandler a 5-picture deal.
Yeah, they did.
That's not right. That's just not right.
If the stuff
so they
is,
are that already.
If their stuff is good.
Things no one wants to watch. That's what Netflix does.
If the movies and TV shows are good, and generally speaking, they have been good. I haven't seen that Adam Sandler Ridiculous 6, so I have no idea, but most of it's really good, so we kind of look at it. I mean, fair to Midland on Arrested Development season 4, I get that, but still, it's enough that everybody went, oh, okay, cool, our stuff has a home, and I think people see it differently than a direct-to-DVD Kindergarten Cop 2 with Dolph Lundgren in it, which is happening, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely, and you get a lot of goodwill.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's a smart move to say, we're the one, we're listening to you, we're Netflix, and we care. That is a smart strategy.
Yeah.
Although I am saving Haley Atwell for Doctor Who. I really want her to be the doctor.
Wow. Look at you saving people.
I mean, I don't get to do anything to Haley Atwell or
do you have her in your
anyone
pocket?
Associated with her. But that would be my wish.
All right.
Let's get a little tech here. Google had its I/O conference for developers this week and announced a voice-activated device called Home that has a speaker in the base and integrates with other Cast devices like your Chromecast video, your Chromecast audio, your Vizio with Cast built in. The modular case can be customized with different color bases, has a mic, speaker, no buttons, just voice activated. little shorter and squatter than the Echo, but very similar, and can support multi-room audio with those other Cast-enabled devices. Supports home networking systems for home control, obviously Nest, but others as well. And Google Home will be arriving for you later this year at a price to be determined.
It looks like it should be puffing out a little fresh scent every couple of minutes, too, like a little air wick bathroom kind of flower deal going on.
It's very air freshener or vase-y, although if you think of it as the, like, complete prototype that it is, I'm not even sure it'll look like this when and if it ever actually does come out.
Yeah, it did strike me as not done yet, and I don't know why I feel that way. It looked fine. I don't know why. I think I expected, if they'd had pricing and maybe a specific date, then I would have gone, okay, this
even
is probably
the unit. Even if they'd said Q4. But they just kind of said later this year.
It's coming later this year. And then the ad for it was like, it'll be able to do all these things. You could call it OK Google, or you could call it Hey Google, but maybe that's going to be later too. I mean, it's just so, like, the fuzz factor on this
is thick.
So, I mean, the fuzz factor on the entire I.O. keynote I thought was really high, and I'm willing to actually give Google a little bit of credit for the fact that they're basically starting over as a division within Alphabet. This is the first I.O. since they spun off, but man, like, I've been joking for years that IO is always like a bunch of cool stuff in Android that only three phones are going to get, and then a bunch of cool stuff that they're working on that no one's ever going to see ever. But this one was like all of that and didn't even have a name for the new Android.
What was the
the Google Home might be amazing, but I'm not even totally prepared to admit yet that it's real.
What was the ball home Nexus thing they were making?
The Q.
What happened?
That one over there in the closet.
What happened to that?
It's in my closet.
Amazing.
Where it belongs.
Yeah. No, I think the Q became the Chromecast, essentially. And maybe a little bit Google TV, but it just got moved into other things.
Okay.
Yeah, they just absorbed the tech out. I mean, I think Google Home, like, look, if it turns out to be a real thing, it could be great. I consider the only drawback of the Amazon Echo to be the fact that it's not connected to Google.
Yeah, that's a good
point. Like, when I ask it for information, I just want it to ask Google and then tell me.
Yeah.
I think
so. If this thing can do that, great. Because I never buy crap with my Amazon Echo. In fact, we just play a game where we put funny things on the shopping list. It's like, do you want me to read your shopping cart? And then it says, like, a bajillion dollars, a ruby, like dog food. You know, I mean, my son and I just goop off with it.
That's so funny, because the shopping list is the one thing I actually use. But I use it just to be like, oh, we're out of peanut butter. Add peanut butter to the shopping list. And then when I'm in the grocery store, I use that to remind me what to buy. Right?
Wait, so where is the shopping? Is it somewhere
in the
app?
Amazon Echo app.
I'm not going to open
it. And what
app,
I would really, really want to do is have it integrate with a different app, because I used to use an app for my shopping list before that had a lot more features, like color coding by what type, like whether it's vegetables or dairy or whatever. Anyway, I would absolutely use Google Home, because Google Assistant, the new name for the OK Google stuff, is way more competent than Amazon's Alexa right now.
Yep, totally.
Yeah, and I've got an Echo as well, and I'd like the idea. Well, Molly, you already said it. The thing my Echo is missing is connectivity to Google. I care way less about shopping with the device than I do Googling with it, or having Google services tied into it so that, like that creepy family in that video. Sorry, video. Like, Apple does this too. Those creepy families they put in these videos to interact with this stuff just gives me the willies. They're all just so, okay, Google, let's ask you 50 questions before breakfast even starts. Like, that's.
Oh, yeah. And let's not talk to each other at all,
yeah,
by the way.
Very weird.
Whole family.
I think that's real weird. But anyway, the idea that it would be connected to Google is far more interesting to me than how it's connected to Amazon services. That being said, the Echo is a really competent device. I have a prediction during forecast later that I think this is like a little teaser we're all going to be real interested in, because it has to do with this. And I have a feeling, I think I have a prediction about what Amazon will do in the shadow of this potential competitor.
Yeah, because they've benefited from having no one else in the space, and they've started to become the de facto home center because of that. But they're going to have to speed up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
If the Google Home comes out, because
good point, which is that the Amazon Echo skills releases have been very slow and steady.
Yeah.
And it's been kind of one of those things where it's like, yeah, if you wait long enough, you'll eventually get the stuff that you want, like Spotify integration and the ability to control your light bulbs and all of that stuff. But if they may not be able, like you said, to continue on that time scale.
Yeah.
For very much longer. Although, then again, this thing may never appear. I mean, we don't know anything about the new Google Hardware Group. Like, I just, Google, I don't know. I feel
pretty good about the two apps, Duo and Allo, and Google Home. I feel like we will actually see those.
Oh, yeah, yeah. As far as getting them, yes. I think those apps are absolutely happening. Whether they take off or are a big deal or kids decide to switch or any of that is a big open question, but I think those apps are totally coming. But those air freshener looking home things, it very well could have been a way to just say, here's this thing. It's an open standard. Now let's see if Samsung and a million other manufacturers come to us and say we'd like to certify potential future devices.
Well, that's dangerous. Right. And that's the one where they're like, oh, we are going to put something out. We just didn't talk about it. And I'm real skeptical about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't even get me started. Talk
about fuzzy. It was so fuzzy. You just wanted to give it a big hug.
Yeah.
It was like a giant stuffy.
Kind of like a child, mm-hmm. because all the names of everything they launched had like little kid names like Allo and Knock Knock. Knock. And what was the other thing? I forgot now. Oh, Daydream. And it's a lot of kid stuff. It's
like
weird.
They went all the way too far. They tried to say like, no, we get consumers. We're not just like nerds who don't understand consumers and can't build product. Look, we have Allo. Knock, knock. Like, look how adorable we are. We made
that's
the thing
you're
like
gonna
a face
be...
and you can have a pink one.
That's why you're right about Google Home, because they didn't give it a cute name. They're obviously not serious about it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Google
Domi or something.
And we all love Google, by the way. And Tom's wife works for YouTube. There's the disclaimers.
Oh, there you go. By the way, points to Schnago in the chat room for remembering that Google announced Google Home in 2012. It was an entirely different thing. It was their home automation system before they bought Nest.
Oh, right. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. That makes me want to look up this cartoon that I tweeted the other day. That was like just the Google disaster, right? It was like, I won. Do you have the Google? You know what? I'm just going to look it up while we keep talking.
That's totally fine. All right. I love that idea.
We will move on to the Mr. Robot in the hands of the internet's hackers. Now, Mr. Robot, great show about hacking. Universally lauded for its depiction of hacking and its excellent story. On May 10th, USA Network launched a new site for Mr. Robot. They had a little fake Linux shell in there that could take commands. You could do a little like fake faux hacking on it. But real hackers, one named Zemnems, discovered a cross-site scripting vulnerability. And rather than take advantage of it, he emailed writer Sam Esmail about it. It was fixed within a few hours. And then on May 13th, a hacker named Cornum found that the site's email registration code was vulnerable to a SQL injection. He was just using a pen testing toolkit, SQL map. He was doing a little white hacking, and he alerted the site about that as well. So I have a feeling Mr. Robot may end up being the most secure television show website ever created.
But you know what? I have to say, like, those two incidents say so much about the respect that legit hackers and geeks have for that show. Because
mm-hmm.
nobody defaced it. Nobody was like, oh, you losers. Like, it's when a doctor watches a medical show and just wants to start crying. Yeah. Like, for the most part, when geeks watch Mr. Robot, they're not that mad.
No, in fact, it does
a pretty good job.
It's been the opposite of that. Everything I've heard, I still am embarrassed I've never seen it, but everything I've heard from anybody I talk to loves that show, and they like it for that reason. And so, yeah, like when you started this, when I first saw this time, I thought, oh, no, what are we doing? Let's not take this thing that is so good at this whole hacking storytelling and ruin it. But no, these guys just, you know, wearing the white hat today, which is fantastic.
Yeah, to me that actually speaks volumes about the audience that the show has built.
Sure.
And the respect it's built.
I hadn't thought about this until you said that, but it also sheds light on what hackers actually do. Hackers aren't all bad. Some mm-hmm. hackers just hack because they want to see what's there. And these are two examples of that. Neither one of these guys wanted to deface the site, like you said, but their first response, because they're hackers, was like, huh, what's broken? What's in? Oh, look, there's SQL injection. Oh, look, there's cross-site scripting. And then the next step was, I better tell them about it, which is the differentiation between a hacker and a cracker.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least a malicious hacker.
Right. A malicious hacker. Oh, my God. I feel like it's 2005 all over. I mean, for like media outlets have been debating this nomenclature for years, for like over a decade. I think everybody's now settled on hackers, which is just kind of a bummer. Yep. Or maybe malicious hackers. But yes. Anyway.
Yeah.
It's the difference between a-holes and not.
I was once called a malicious cracker, yeah, but it's got
exactly. Like they could.
Well,
totally
it's not going
like,
to get.
Oh, I found the thing, Mr. Loser. But they didn't. Yeah.
It's not going to get any less 2005 in here because this is a copyright story. Torrent Freak reporting on yet another example of the asymmetry of YouTube's content ID taking down an innocent victim. Here's what happened. An episode of Family Guy included a clip about a trick in the Nintendo game Double Dribble that allowed you to make three-point shots. Mm. The clip they showed of the three-point shots is pretty identical to a 2009 YouTube video by Switched showing like, hey, look what you can do in Nintendo Double Dribble. So here's what happens. Fox, as usual, uploads the episode to YouTube, turns on Content ID, as they always do, to make sure nobody's pirating Family Guy. And then the Double Dribble video from 2009 is taken down as violating the copyright of Fox because it includes the identical footage that Fox probably took from that video.
Okay, so the snake,
certainly without permission.
The snake is eating itself, but then crapping itself and then eating itself again is what's happening here.
Yeah. It's the DMCA centipede.
Well, and it's not even proper DMCA. I mean, proper DMCA would be Family Guy sends a note to YouTube saying, hey, we think these people have video with us. It's YouTube stepping in and creating Content ID to satisfy Viacom and others, creating a system that has winners and losers. Because the way it should work is Family Guy should be taken down from YouTube because it has this clip of a previously existing video in it.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, there's clearly no prior art in the Content ID system, which is just astonishing. Like, it doesn't have a simple date check.
Yeah.
It's haves and have nots. You're either in the Content ID system or you're not. Switched wasn't, so he loses.
Yeah. And by the way, the game Double Dribble is garbage. I just wanted to complete separate issue.
More importantly,
it's not a good video game.
Well, you could get a 3-point shot from half court 80% of the time. Come on.
And technically, that's a Konami game published on the NES, so that snake can further eat itself. Yeah. That's a weird deal.
That's the part where the snake was taking a crap on itself.
Always.
I get it now.
Oh, it's a bad game, guys.
Yeah.
That is so insane. Anyway, takedownabuse.org/familyguy has a petition. I can't see whether it has, more numbers than Agent Carter's petition, but it's worth a try.
Not, sadly. Well, and this is one of the reasons to bring this up is not just to have Molly and Tom go down memory lane with a copyright rant, but also to actually point out that we have the music companies especially, but also the TV and film industry pushing to change the DMCA to take away takedown notices so that there wouldn't even be a way to combat this.
Yeah.
They want to tighten up the
DMCA. The takedown process is not strong enough. Yeah. Phenomenally, like the recording industry and the people who actually wrote the DMCA are now saying that this law that has caused a tsunami of unintended consequences is not enough for them. Is not strong enough for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Every day my morning show has licensed music in it that we pay to use, and we can't put our video on YouTube because they say we haven't. And we have no way of telling them.
Right.
Well, because music was also licensed by somebody else who put it up under Content ID.
Yeah.
It's this exact same problem.
Yep.
And what they want to do is change the DMCA to work like that all the time, everywhere, for everyone. Wouldn't that be awesome?
So that if you have enough money to say, I have the claim to this, I have the rightful claim to this. I claim this land for Spain. then you get it and everybody else gets kicked out.
Spain wishes it had those revenues.
Spain wishes it had that double dribble cheat code.
I can't even get a coalition government together.
So the conclusion is they're doing the thing and they're going to have a bunch of people sign it. And eventually we'll get a Double Dribble TV show on Netflix. Got it. All right.
Right.
Kevin Smith.
Yeah. Kevin Smith.
Kevin Smith is attached to that project.
Finally, IMAX is working with Google's Jump platform to develop a cinema-grade virtual reality camera and will provide Google with some existing cinematic footage to convert to VR. IMAX is also partnering with the makers of Star VR, Seabreeze, to launch VR. I'm sorry, Seabreeze. That's what I used to put on my face when I was a teen. Starbreeze is the name of the Star VR maker. To launch VR centers in 6 locations worldwide, starting with Los Angeles and eventually including China.
That is super interesting from this one point of view that I have on this. Starbreeze is actually a game developer, and they're famous for a bunch of very well-received video games over the years. And they announced not long ago that they had their own VR set coming, and they were making this big deal out of it. And people were kind of ignoring it. It didn't make a big splash at E3 or other conferences. It was kind of getting shoved to the side. I think this is a really interesting, perhaps proof that they're going a different route, that they're pushing this into a different place that isn't about trying to compete necessarily with the Oculus or the Vive or even the PlayStation VR, but in a very different place and say, hey, we're working with IMAX. We've got ideas that are outside of what, you know, Oculus or Facebook or anybody else cares about. That's super interesting to me. I'm not sure it'll work or anyone will care, but
I think the idea of these public VR experiences is really interesting. That apparently is something that is somewhat common in China and is almost because distribution is such a problem for VR and just access, like nobody has a headset, right? Like everything is in demo stage. It's kind of like VR is Google I/O mm-hmm. keynote. Mm-hmm. Like it's all fuzz, right? It's all announcements. It's all future. It's all what's coming to some extent. It's all demos. Like
I got one right here.
That looks like that looks like a headset
to
me.
You have got one.
Yep.
There's one.
Yep. You're the guy.
Doesn't it feel actually?
You know what? I'm also working on a VR platform with a headset attached to it. I'm going to put out some tech specs later on today. But no, I mean, I think this idea of the public VR experience is really interesting because they're trying to sort of democratize access to virtual reality, which I think is actually that's sort of a smart move for IMAX to make.
It's also it's a really good move if you're trying to perpetuate pink eye.
Well, that is the title of it on our subreddit, Scott's Pink Eye Nightmare.
That doesn't surprise me.
Is this an ongoing discussion?
Yeah,
you just ruined it.
Public VR grosses me out because I know I have too many friends that go to these cons and come home with like pink eye and they're like, what'd you do? Oh, I used an Oculus Rift for 15 minutes, you know, because everybody's putting it on, taking it off, putting it on.
Why did I not think of that?
Aside from that, though, Molly, let's say they have a great way to fix it. I really wanted to bring this up, so I'm glad we're going to bridge the topic just for a second. You talked to a friend of mine who helps run a video game department up at the University of Utah. Her name's Corinne Lewis. You saw her at GDC.
She's so awesome.
Yes, and you had her sit down and talk to you, and she seemed, this is pre-launch of the actual VR headsets that are now in everyone's hands. When I say everyone, that's maybe part of the irony here, but she had said, I'm not so sure. Not so sure the adoption is going to be as quick as everyone thinks or that this bleeding edge is going to be all that bleeding. And I was like, oh, Corinne, you're just such a stick in the mud on VR and stuff. But it kind of has played out that way a little bit. I mean, yes, there are plenty of people who have picked it up and there are, you know, there were back orders and there were delays and all those things that seem to indicate a big demand. But man, I feel like things have gone like silent since they came out. And I'm pro this stuff. Do you have a take on that? Like why? Or did we all just get overhyped and forgot that hype exists? What happened there?
I think that we all just got overhyped and forgot that any new market takes, any new consumer technology market, according to the CEA, takes 7 to 10 years to mature. Mm. And this is like day one.
Yeah.
For virtual reality. I mean, this is really... virtual reality has come and gone in lots of different forms. This is the first time we have something that seems viable, but it's still super expensive. Hardly anybody has product. I mean, Oculus could barely get a product out the door. And I chalk that up primarily to the fact that it's really hard and it's hard to do it well. And it's hard to overcome some remaining serious concerns like cost and nausea and content. I mean, nobody knows exactly how to do storytelling. So it's so early that the idea of declaring this a consumer success anytime in the next 3 to 5 years to me seems insane. I think there's no way that this is anything more than a hobbyist or enthusiast kind of thing for at least half a decade.
Yeah. Right. And I also don't think you should declare it a failure yet either.
No.
If for the same reason, right? Because when I showed people the HTC Vive, I suddenly had two people who wanted to buy one, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
oh, sure.
They had to experience it, which goes back to the story. That's what IMAX is doing, is saying, hey, we know a lot of people are not interested in this at that price. They're not interested in putting on a headset and going through all of that. But if we can get them to try it out in a fun location, maybe they'll start to understand. Maybe as the prices come down, these mobile units come out, they'll start to move into the market. But yeah, 5 to 7 years seems like about the right timeline for that sort of thing to percolate throughout society.
I really do still agree that it has all the potential in the world. And it is something that once people try it, they're like, okay, I get it. I would redesign my, like, not segue, you know, they're going to redesign cities around this, but I could completely imagine people building like virtual reality man caves in the basement and a whole new media room. And I get why Facebook would spend that kind of money on it, because it is the ultimate engagement tool. I mean, once these technical problems are worked out, once it's widely accessible and affordable, people would be down the VR rabbit hole for days at a time. Completely buy that future, but I just think it's really far out, and that's also okay.
Sure.
It's sort of like, I don't know, it's almost, I mean, I've gotten like a lot more mellow on these ideas in my old age, but you know, it's like a new thing comes out and you want to declare it a winner, and if it's not, if it doesn't look like an immediate winner, you want to declare it a failure, and none of those things are true. And the fact is that like stuff that seemed like a gimmick when it came out, like I would buy a 3D TV today because 3D movies are super cool now, and the glasses are really lightweight and it looks hella good.
Yeah, it's improved. It looks great. No one's talking about it, but it's there.
No one's talking about it, yeah. But it's awesome.
Yeah.
Right? Like once VR gets to the point where no one's talking about it, it just is on the market.
Yep.
Then it will be there. But yeah, I think the hype made us all think that we were all like every movie is going to be VR next year.
Yeah.
You know? And that's just not,
yeah,
that's just not the case. We're still, it's still like building blocks time.
Yeah, exactly. There's not a hit yet because there aren't enough VR headsets in enough people's hands or heads to have a hit.
Yeah.
And there's some really cool games. I have a game that I was playing where you actually stand on a platform and are attacked by alien robots. And everybody who plays it just gets lost in it, and they're jumping around and shooting and madly yelling. And it's so much more fun than an FPS where you're just sitting on your couch. But like, I know that because someone told me about that game. I even had the headset in Steam and I didn't know about that game.
Yeah.
So, and then I only know about it because I actually have a headset where most people do not have a headset. And in fact, HTC just said, yeah, we're shutting down pre-orders for a while because we're out of headsets. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's early days.
It's not just early. Yeah, it's not just early adopters. It's earliest adopters, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it's not the 1%. It's the 0.001% right
this,
now.
Is this
that should
Microsoft
in no way, but I agree
tablets?
That should in no way take away from the technology and the potential. Yeah.
Is this Microsoft tablets in 2000 or is it the iPad? Version one.
Because I mean the iPad, it's the Newton.
Oh man.
Ooh. Well, see, I think it's better than the, I think it's past.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not even saying the Newton had, but
yeah.
Look, there's a lot of screen door effect out there. There are a lot of people getting actually motion sick. Like if a product is on the market that causes a certain percentage of people to become physically ill, I don't think it's unfair to compare it to the Newton. At this point,
yeah,
but it was still a groundbreaker, you know.
I like the idea that it was Newton's making us sick, but I know what you meant.
Yeah.
Just to everyone get excited. Maybe the next movie you go see, they'll have, let's call the experience Conjunctivimax.
I know. Oh,
and you can
bravo.
And title.
Yeah, just to be clear, that is DOA. I'm never ever putting my little eyeballs on one of those things.
I knew you were with me. And
turns out the public VR experience.
I know it's gross, man. Not doing it. All right. We're going to jump into the pop quiz, but before we do, a reminder that this show is brought to you by us.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
Thank the subredditors.
Oh, yeah, do that.
Iceworm 1980, Strike It Rich 1, Steve Io, Wayne Something, Mr. Anthropology, and Captain Kipper all submitted stories that we talked about. You can too, currentgeek.reddit.com.
Thank you guys for that. Seriously, we love you. Frogpants.cratejoy.com. I would point your squinties there because there is a monthly crate you get from us that Tom and I create and that gets shipped out by crazy people like Dave Michael. And it's involving all sorts of cool things. I just finished the second half of the 2044 calendar that Tom wrote. And so now you've got July through the end of the year. That's shipping in June. Another one just went out for May subscribers. If you don't know what it is and you want to learn more, go to frogpants.cratejoy.com. There are books sometimes from some of our guests. We get little trinkety things, cool stuff, rad stuff all around. That's frogpants.cratejoy.com. It's how we support the show, and we recommend you guys go check that out. Guys, guess what I got to tell you about? HelloFresh.com. I don't want to freak you out or anything, but that's some of the best food I've ever had. I am not making that up. That is not written here for me to say. That is not part of the talking points. Like, literally, some of the best gourmet food I have had. And I made it in 30 minutes or less. It's a meal delivery kit from HelloFresh.com. And they make cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions. Even a dummy like me can do it. Each recipe is designed to take about 30 minutes. That's all it took for me in this last one. Recipes are set up so anyone can make a delicious meal in that much time. They only source the freshest ingredients. They bring it right to your doorstep in an insulated box. And I've teamed up with HelloFresh so that they can team up with us on this show and offer everyone $40 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com. Just use the offer code CURRENTGEEK when you subscribe. That's HelloFresh.com, the offer code CURRENTGEEK. Oh, man. I'm not kidding. It's so good, you guys. So take care of it, will you? $40 off. CurrentGeek.com. Go there today. Don't be a slacker. And eat better than you have in a long time. At HelloFresh.com.
America scores and wins.
All right. Music means it's time for the pop quiz. We take an area of our guest's expertise and we ask them questions in that area, usually a nerdy topic or subject, and see how they do.
Molly, I'm sweating bees over are you here.
Sweating bees or beads?
Sweating bees.
Okay, bees. That's the worst kind of sweat is bee sweat.
It's painful.
Here's how it'll work. If you get a question right, you'll hear this. If you get it wrong, you'll hear this. And Tom will score it in kind of a weird way. He'll do weird point stuff. So just let it flow
out. Just the rules, Scott. Just the rules.
Just the rules.
Tom's like, I will.
Yeah. Will I?
All right.
All right. Question number one. Oh, by the way, your topic is, because we know you love it, The Simpsons. The Simpsons. Oh. You're a big fan.
Dang it. Okay.
You're a big fan. And it's a long, that's 24 years of that show. So, woo, strap in.
But I stopped after the first 13. Okay. All right.
That's all right. There are only 8 questions, so let's see how you do. Number one, or right. First question, what sector of the Springfield nuclear plant does Homer work in?
Like, is it a number?
Yeah, it's a number and a letter.
What sector? Yeah it is a number. Sector 13?
Oh, I thought you almost thought you were going to say it. 7G.
7G.
Yeah.
I was like, it's sector 7 something, but it just felt too obvious. Maybe I should just go with that.
So you get 0.4 for Eli being here? 4 off.
He is really good at this.
That's up to you. There's no rule against it.
Yeah, we don't have a...
Eli.
We don't have a no friend.
I'm doing Simpsons trivia. Come help me.
Oh, do you hear that? That's awesome. Okay.
Okay.
I'm in.
Let's do this.
Okay.
All right.
Let's do this.
You ready? Next question.
All right, I got my ringer.
Here we go. In the episode I Married Marge, Homer and Marge exit a movie theater. Homer ruins the ending to what movie in this episode or in this scene?
Do you think you ever knew this one?
Was it
Star Wars?
Hunger Games.
Hunger Games? Let's find out. Oh, it was Star Wars. The Empire
it was Star
Strikes
Wars.
Back.
I knew it.
All right, so you get half point.
Half point.
Half point.
Okay. Let's see. Where are we? Oh, yeah, and they give away the spoiler. The spoiler was that Vader's Luke's dad. That was the
Luke's
deal there.
Dad, totally. I did know that one, actually.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
In case nobody's seen that yet.
Seen Empire Strikes Back yet.
I think that one is out of the statute of limitations. All right, here's the next one. In the episode Lisa's Wedding, a possible future is shown where Lisa is in college. Actually, this is the episode that featured Donald Trump as president, by the way. What band poster does she have in her dorm? So what band poster?
Seriously?
It's a hard one.
Green
Day?
One Direction?
Let's find out if that's correct. Is it One Direction? It is the Rolling Stones.
Oh, the Rolling Stones. Okay, wow, we are terrible at this.
That's all right.
I even called in help.
No one's good
look
at this.
Look how little. Look how his references are all totally modern. The Hunger Games?
One Direction? I remember when he was just a little tiny guy, so he's grown.
I know, now he's Gen Z. He's like a man.
Amazing.
That happens to humans.
In the episode Beyond Blunderdome, Marge and Bart see a shootout between police and what actor? And I'll give you a hint.
Mel Gibson.
I'll give you... Oh, you think it's Mel Gibson? Let's find out, is it? Nope. It is Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, of course
I
it is.
Oh, I that one.
Yeah.
You should let me answer that.
Okay, you got the next one.
Because he's in all the episodes.
Homer and his friends were once in the B-Sharps. Okay, there's a little band of theirs. What was the name of their second record?
This is horrible. You guys are jerks. How do people do on this?
It depends. Once in a while.
Not very good.
I love my ringer just left me.
I'm gonna go on FX right now and,
and look it up.
Also, get your gear on. We gotta go.
I'm gonna go see.
Okay, bye. We do not know. We concede the point.
The answer is. Hold on. The answer is Bigger Than Jesus. There you go. That was the name of it. All right, second to last question. In the episode Simple Simpson, comic book guy wants to get rid of some comics and makes Bart pay for them because he said Bart smudged them even though he didn't. The books are Richie Rich, Incorporates in Delaware, Easy to Believe Tales, Supergirl versus the Glass Ceiling, and what fourth book? I know this one because it's amazing. What is the fourth book he makes him buy? And keep in mind, these are books that nobody wants.
No. Aquaman?
Let's find it. Is it Aquaman? Incorrect. It is The Green Listener.
The Green Listener?
It's one of my favorite.
We're going to get a half point for Aquaman being poetically true.
Yeah, that's
thanks.
Absolutely.
I think
well.
They come from hell. These questions come from hell.
If I ever find them.
They come from Ice Worm on Twitter. You can direct your comments.
Blame him, not us.
Oh,
all right.
No. Final, I won't blame him. Like, he's clearly winning.
Final question. Troy McClure once starred in a musical based on what science fiction classic?
Planet of the Apes.
You got it. Well done.
You get 2 points because you both answered it right.
Yeah, you both had it.
Dr. Zaius. We know the song.
That's
like,
a great episode.
We're not total losers.
No, that's a heck of an episode.
Oh, my God. Thank God that happened. We're just a little bit redeemed.
Well, strong finish.
Let's
strong
find
finish.
Out. Yeah, Tom, how redeemed are they? How's their score?
They finished up with 3.4 points.
3.4 points? That's not the worst we've seen.
No, it's not.
No. We've had worse. It's fine.
It's right there at the solid median.
Yeah, it's
we
not
knew
bad.
Dr. Zaius song. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like calling in your 9-year-old is a rookie move.
I think you actually probably deserve a point just for that.
Yeah.
You know, just for the bold.
That was great. One Direction is my favorite answer.
He's like, am I famous?
I kind of thought One Direction was a pretty good shot. That
yeah, it's not bad. And really, what were the Rolling Stones but the One Direction of their time?
Also, can you spoil the Hunger Games?
No.
That's what I start thinking.
I don't know.
Is it spoilable?
I don't know. You mean like, is it too soon?
Or the end of it? No. I guess I don't think. I guess you could say they live.
Here's
they eat.
I'll spoil it. I only saw the first one. There's your spoiler.
Anyway.
All right. Well done.
All right. I'm making him get dressed for the baseball game, which I will have to do soon. So perhaps we should move past.
Yeah.
My
watch how fast
the
this
future
goes.
Promises
look at this.
Even more startling things to come.
It's Forecast. Used to be a show. Now it's a segment. We talk about the future, what we think is going to happen. Okay, I've left you guys on pins and needles long enough. Here's what I think is going to happen. The Amazon Echo will be forced to become a Google Home spec'd device to try and retain its Amazon-ness and keep pace. They'll keep the Amazon side of things, but they will include that spec, become certified to do so that they can have the Google ability that these things are going to need to be useful and to still compete as a device in your home. And that might give them the edge because you'll have the two things happening at once. And I know they hate Google and they don't want to do it, but that's my prediction. Molly, what do you think?
Do you need to be a Google spec device in order to integrate Google as your informational backend?
I don't know.
Like, I sort of feel like, couldn't you just plug in Google as a skill?
Well, all the stuff that they were on stage fuzzily, as you put, talking about how smart the responses are, how they're conversational, contextual answers, all that stuff. That all seemed to be very specific to Google Assistant, which this relies heavily upon. So,
they have an API for conversational interface, if you want to be contextual, but they don't have an API for the entire Google Assistant. That you'd have to make a direct deal with Google for.
Right. And if they did, which they say will be part of this, because they're making this not an open standard, but they're making it a standard you can certify for, right? Like an Android phone or whatever. It just makes sense to me that if they still want to compete, they may have to do something like that, or else I feel like they're going to get eclipsed. Now, this is a lot of presumption about this thing is for real happening this fall, that it's going to be as amazing as they said it would, and all the stuff we talked about earlier. But in a vacuum, I just feel like Amazon is a little nervous, maybe. This isn't their expertise. It is Google's, or it seems to be emerging as Google's expertise. So I would be nervous.
I don't know, like, which thing is good, like the technology, but this is the Google question. If I'm Amazon, I'm like, I can execute. Yeah. I made a product. It's in Gen 2. Mm-hmm. We have add-on products related to this and people like it and it's working. I mean, yes, it could get eclipsed because Apple or Amazon's core competency is not yet hardware or not exactly hardware, but you're assuming that Google comes out with a product that works, whereas Amazon, all the Echo really has to do is improve its natural language ability, which I think Amazon's done a pretty phenomenal job with speech recognition technology. If natural language is the next logical step, I feel like they could get close enough that if they just plugged in Google, boom, it's great. Done still deal. As great as it ever was.
Yeah. What do you think, Tom?
There's a couple of it's a complex situation because I don't think, based on what Fire TV doesn't do, like include Google Videos as an app, that Amazon has any interest in letting Google in the door, because Amazon wants to use the Echo to get you to use more Amazon services. That's its main thing. On the other hand, the Echo does work with Nest. So why wouldn't it interoperate with other things? I don't think the Echo works with Home, but I think the part of this that is the most probable and interesting is, does Amazon contract with Google to use Google Assistant on the back end to inform Alexa, and would Google strike that deal?
Yeah, that's a
big
question.
And does it need it?
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I think the central question is, does it need it? And I'm not sure that it does.
It needs it for functionality. It may not need it yet for competitiveness.
Right. I would agree with that. When that thing
Alexa
comes out,
might get good enough that it wouldn't need it functionality-wise either.
And when and if it comes out, that will determine that. Like if that suddenly is like opens a whole new world to information access and, you know, everything they fuzzied about on stage, well then they're facing a challenge, an actual challenge.
I like fuzzy as a verb.
It's pretty good. I think that
Amazon, though, the other reason that Amazon might not go full Google is trust. Because even though these devices freak people out, and they reasonably should, and there's no reason that anybody should think that Amazon collects an iota less data about you than Google does, it has a little more brand trust in terms of device in your living room that's listening to you. For example, I find it very interesting that the Google Home has zero buttons, including a mute button. Mm-hmm. Like the Echo has a mute button so that you can at least feel like it's not listening to you all the time.
it's like that walk button at the stoplight.
Yeah. Right. Google's like, you can't even have end-to-end encryption in your messaging app because we want to read that stuff.
Yeah.
Because the contextual information is so great. Like, we're going to be listening to, I don't know. I just think people right now at least think of Amazon as less intrusive and less sort of privacy invading. And so if the Amazon Echo became a Google powered device, it might lose a little brand trust.
I think you're right. I think they could decide to use the assistant on the back end and then not risk that brand tarnishing, because they could say, oh, we're just using the technology. It's all still running on Amazon servers.
Right.
Well, but I don't think they would tie into the service and have it running through Google for that very reason.
Yeah.
We'll know this fall.
I feel like my corollary prediction is just that Google Home is never going to come out.
I will bet you a stake that it comes out by the end of this year.
All right. I think it's in the same development queue as the Apple television.
Oh, wow. Not the TV have it, but the tele. Yeah. That's an interesting point. All right. Well, we'll see if steaks are eaten by who and when. But for now, that's the show,
everybody.
That's
the best thing about a steak bet is both sides get to eat it.
Yeah, that's
everybody
true.
Everybody wins.
Just one of them pays for it. Molly Wood, I cannot express with regular English words how happy we were to have you on today. Thanks for doing it with us.
That was delightful, you guys. That was so fun. Thank you for having me. Thanks for letting me, like, you know, barge in.
Oh, yeah.
Invite myself on your show and suck at Simpsons trivia.
Come back anytime. Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding? It'd be amazing. This is the way we can get that reunion happening on the regular. It's always good to have you here. And tell people where they can find you. You know, the usual podcast thing here at the end. Where are you at? What are you doing?
Yeah, totally. You can find me on the tweeters, of course, at Molly Wood. But I do have a little snackable podcast happening over at Marketplace that I call The Dispatch. And it is just like a little 5 or 6 minute weekly show that talks about what's happening in tech and business. This week it happens to be a rant about Allo, the Allo app, and Google's privacy choices that it's made within that app. So it is not currently, it's like, you know, right now you have to manually plug the RSS link into your podcatcher to down to subscribe to it, but you can, it's on SoundCloud, and you can find it at marketplace.org.
Nice. That sounds great. I'm sure that you love the opt-in security of that device or of that app.
Yeah, don't I seem like I would just love
that right up your alley.
Security.
Yeah, your favorite thing in the world, probably.
Such a good idea, you guys.
Tom Merritt, anything else before we blow out of here that you'd like to mention?
Thanks to everybody who made Pilot X a success. It is going to be published by Inkshares at inkshares.com. Woo-hoo! So if you didn't get in on the pre-orders, you can still pre-order it. It is going to be a book, a real book in bookstores and everything. Go to TomMerrittBooks.com and you can find a link to Pilot X.
All right. Everybody wants to see Warcraft with Tom and I and others like Brian Ibbett. Come to Salt Lake City June 11th and watch it with us. It's like at 12:30 p.m. And you can get tickets right now. There are still some available, not many. So get on it if you want to come. That's at frogpants.com/Warcraft. It's going to do it for us. CurrentGeek.com is our website. CurrentGeek.reddit.com is our subreddit. Feel free to submit there. CurrentGeek@gmail.com is our email address. Ace Detect, Scott Johnson, Molly Wood, and Current Geek on Twitter. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for Molly. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we take a look at the newly signed Defend Trade Secrets Act and how this is a big step toward harmonizing intellectual property as much as possible. Although President Obama and Congress have not pushed through the legislative gridlock much during his final months in office, one area of notable exception was federal regulation of trade secrets. The Defend Trade Secrets Act won widespread bipartisan support in both the House and Senate and had no opposition from the President. So what does this change, and is it a good thing? First, a little background. A trade secret is confidential proprietary information which a company chooses to hold in secret rather than publicly disclosing for coverage by patent protection or the like. It covers any valuable commercial information which allows a business to hold an advantage over another competitor without the same information. The most notable example is probably the formula for Coca-Cola. By keeping such information confidential, protection of the business asset can continue indefinitely instead of for the limited time provided by other IP protection like patents. Trade secrets were historically something that were only protected on the state level based on state laws. Unlike patent and copyright, which are mandated by a clause in the Constitution, trademarks and trade secrets are not a required function of the federal government. Nevertheless, just like the Lanham Act has long made trademarks protected on the federal level, now trade secrets will be also. Trademarks and trade secrets will both have protection at the state level and at the federal level. Thankfully, in the case of trade secrets, the state laws and the federal law do not differ by much in most circumstances. However, one of the key benefits of the DTSA is harmonizing the various state laws, which mostly implemented a blueprint treatise called the Uniform Trade Secrets Act, but sometimes in slightly different ways. Allowing trade secret lawsuits into federal court allows for more predictable, nationwide case law to be developed on this subject. In addition, federal courts tend to be more well-versed at handling cross-state and international disputes, which often arise in IP contexts. It's typically a net positive to have multiple venues available to handle a dispute, and that will now be the case for trade secrets. The bottom line is, regardless of whether you support the idea of trade secret protection or IP law in general, having more uniformity and clarity in laws is a step in the right direction. The hope is that the DTSA can offer a fair balance of employee rights in mobility to other jobs and employer rights in protecting confidential information and advantages. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.